At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, your host. U.S. Supreme Court rulings have trended conservative in recent terms, but do the conservative rulings support the idea that it is now a politically charged body and must be reconfigured? That's what left-wing activists are saying, and there's an attempt to increase the number of justices on the court, purportedly so President Joe Biden can appoint liberal justices to that court. Joining us to talk further about this issue of the independence of the judiciary is Stephen Douglas Rosenthal, former Attorney General of Virginia, and also Paul Summers, former Attorney General of Tennessee and Judge of the Court of Criminal Appeals. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me on the Commonwealth Matters.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So both of you are leading this initiative called Keep Nine Amendment. Steve, you're a Democrat. Paul, you're a Republican. So it truly is nonpartisan or bipartisan, if you will. And your goal is to preserve the independence of the United States Supreme Court. Paul, I want to start with you. When you launched this group in 2020, you said in a press release that there's no more important issue for the future of our constitutional system of checks and balances than protecting the independence of the U.S. Supreme Court. The Keep Nine Amendment will permanently prohibit a future president and Congress from manipulating the size of the Supreme Court for political advantage. So, Paul, has support increased for this effort in the last 3 years?
Yes, it has. We've got about 800 former or currently elected state leaders who favor and support the Keep Nine constitutional amendment. We've got over 200 members of Congress, primarily Republicans, who support the Keep Nine constitutional amendment. Let me also say this, in 2019, 15 former attorneys general, about half Democrats and half Republicans, got together and they supported the Keep Nine constitutional amendment, a 13-word amendment, which would be the shortest in the history of the Constitution. And the first chair was Andy Miller, the former Attorney General of Virginia. Unfortunately, Andy died in July of 2021. They called me and asked me, would I be the chair? I said I would. If we had a good, solid, independent type thinking person who was nonpartisan, like Steve Rosenthal. And Steve joined as the co-chair. And so he and I co-chair the Coalition to Preserve the Independence of the United States Supreme Court, also known as the Keep Nine Coalition. By the way, I'm an independent. I'm neither a Republican nor a Democrat. I'm an independent, having been elected statewide in a retention vote for the Court of Criminal Appeals, and also appointed by the Supreme Court of the state of Tennessee. I'll turn it over to Steve.
Steve, could you speak to something that Paul just mentioned about the widespread support from elected officials across the country? 200 members of Congress are supportive of the Keep Nine Amendment, and yet most of them are Republicans. Could you speak to perhaps why more Democrats aren't involved with this?
Well, I think it has to do with some of the most recent decisions that have come out of the Supreme Court, which have become highly politicized. There's a strategic position and there's a political position. Paul and I are on the strategic side. We care about the independence of the Supreme Court. Do I like all the decisions that have come out of the Supreme Court lately? No. Would I like to see some of them reversed? Yes. Does it make sense to pack the court with additional justices just so that can happen? Decidedly no. And that's the whole purpose of the Keep Nine Amendment. Strategically, it's really pretty simple. It's a very complex problem, but it's strategically, there's a simple answer, and that is, if the court were to be packed now, with say Democrats, then once the Republicans are in power, they're going to do the same thing, and it is not ridiculous to say that at some point we may have 25, 38 justices on the Supreme Court, because each side keeps packing to get the results, to try to get the results that they want. So as a strategic matter, while some of the decisions out of the recent Supreme Court are not to particularly Democrats' liking, that is no justification for upending what has been for, what, Paul, 154 years, nine justices on the Supreme Court. And, you know, I would also say, Richard, just what, last week, while the president has not endorsed the Keep Nine Amendment, the president has clearly said that he's not in favor of packing the court. So, you know, strategically, this is incredibly important for our democracy.
I would just like to add that historically in America, we've had anywhere from 6 to 10 justices on the Supreme Court. The last time we had nine was in 1869. Ironically, the Republicans have tried to pack the court probably more times than the Democrats have. For example, during the Civil War, the court was packed 3 different times, and finally, in 1869, right after the Civil War, it was increased back to 9, and we've had 9 for 65% of our constitutional republic. So both parties have been guilty of court packing, and they both should know better, but it's a sugar high. It will not last, and the Supreme Court, being an independent court, does 3 things. It's independent, number 2. It preserves the rule of law, that is, everybody's equal and everybody's endowed with inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And most importantly, they act as a checks and balances on abuse of power by the other branches.
Back in May, several congressional Democrats introduced the Judiciary Act of 2023, which would expand the U.S. Supreme Court by adding 4 seats to create a 13-justice bench. At the press conference, there were supporting groups, including Planned Parenthood, NARAL Pro-Choice America, the League of Conservation Voters, and a group called Demand Justice. So one thing in common here is that half of the groups anyway, maybe 3 out of 4 of the groups were pro-abortion. My question is this, was the Dobbs ruling, which overturned Roe v. Wade, the impetus behind this court packing scheme? Is that something that you could speak to, this Judiciary Act of 2023? Was it because of the Dobbs ruling?
Well, let me maybe elaborate on the Dobbs ruling. I have read the ruling in the Dobbs case. Roe versus Wade was decided in 73. Basically, out of whole cloth, the Supreme Court, in a controversial decision, created the, and I think it was a 7-2 decision, created the concept, the federal concept of abortion. Historically, abortion had been determined by the states. It was decided that there was a federal right to abortion. That created the tripartite or the 3-month rule and so on and so forth. Then it was somewhat diluted later on in another opinion called Planned Parenthood. Then in 2022, Dobbs came around, and the Supreme Court, in a 6-3 decision in Dobbs, said they did not abolish abortion. What they did was they said that the case should have been determined in the states, and they sent it back to the states. So now all 50 states, pursuant to the 10th Amendment, can make a decision about abortion, whether to make it legal, whether to make it illegal, whether to make it criminal or just civil or whatever they want to do. But the point is, the Supreme Court did not abolish abortion. They sent it back to the states where it belonged in the first place. They created it. They changed it. They created it in Roe in 1973. They changed it in 2022. Let me also say this. It's nothing unusual about the United States Supreme Court reversing themselves. For example, in Plessy versus Ferguson, which was a case that happened back about 1896, Plessy versus Ferguson happened. They said separate but equal is constitutional. That's good. That's fine. It's constitutional. But then in Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, as I recall, they said, no, doesn't work. No, not, I'm sorry. Brown versus Board of Education was in 1954. Separate but equal is unconstitutional. They must all be equal, including the schools. So it's not anything unusual. We only hear a very small percentage of the total Supreme Court cases. Of the 7,000 to 10,000 applications for permission to appeal to the United States Supreme Court, we only are granted about 2% max, 2% max. Of those 2% of the Supreme Court applications for permission to appeal, we only hear about 6 or 7 of those opinions. 43% in the last decade of the opinions have been unanimous on the United States Supreme Court.
I don't think that the Dobbs decision, it was not in any way the beginning of this court packing issue. In fact, if you recall, it was an issue that the candidates wouldn't really address back in the last election, though they were asked, they wouldn't address it. So this issue has been boiling for, you know, the last decade or so. Dobbs put an exclamation point on the Democrats seeing a need, in their view, to add justices to the Supreme Court to undo a number of rulings that they find they would say unconstitutional, but at least offensive. Dobbs, you know, of all the issues out there, Dobbs is the one that really set this in motion to the point that it is today, where legislation is being introduced to pack the court. If it goes through, my guess is the next time there's an election, there's going to be the same bill to pack the court again with the opposite party, which is why Paul and I and our group are so opposed to court packing.
Very good. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, your host. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. There's a lot of confusion about the governor's race this year. False claims, denials, and smokescreens. But at CPC, we cut through the smoke so that you can know what the candidates truly believe and what they would do if they got elected. That's why we've interviewed the candidates in person and put together voting resources to help you better understand who represents your values. So go to our website, commonwealthpolicycenter.org, to find out more about the candidates and who would lead Kentucky in the best direction. And hey, make sure you get out and vote on Tuesday, November the 7th. Early voting begins on November the 2nd. So plan to vote this year, make a difference, and vote your values.
Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. And we are talking about the independence of the federal Supreme Court. With me is Stephen Douglas Rosenthal, former Attorney General of Virginia, and Paul Summers, former Attorney General of Tennessee. And gentlemen, just before the break, we were talking about the highly charged Dobbs ruling and the effort to pack the court. There's a bill introduced by several Democrats earlier this year to increase the number of Supreme Court justices from 9 to 4. There have been several threats against Supreme Court justices before Dobbs, just prior to Dobbs, and after. And I'm going to share one of these just shortly before the Dobbs ruling, maybe a couple months before it was released. The ranking Democrat in the U.S. Senate, Chuck Schumer, said this at a pro-abortion rally, and I quote, "I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions." And the awful decisions he was referring to was Dobbs was one of them. The reason I bring this up is because this appeared to be a direct attack, if not a threat, against sitting U.S. Supreme Court members. And I guess this is where I'll go related to our conversation here is, did those incendiary words help bring awareness to your efforts to keep the judiciary independent? Did they highlight perhaps the need to insulate the judiciary from politics? Two different questions there.
Our founding fathers were not only smart, they were clairvoyant. They could read into the future. In 1789, when our original Constitution was ratified, they created three branches of government. Two absolutely were political. Article One, the legislative branch, completely political. Article Two, the executive branch, completely political. But Article Three, the judicial branch, was and is supposed to be non-political. Article One and Article Two, they're elected either 2, 4, or every 6 years. Article Three, judges, whether they're on the Supreme Court or whether they're on the Federal District Court or the Court of Appeals, they are first appointed by the President of the United States and then confirmed by the United States Senate. They are there for life during their good behavior. Now, that is why the Supreme Court and all the judges on the courts in the federal system and the state system, that's why they are supposed to be and are independent of politics. They shouldn't worry about polls or politics or policy. They are supposed to interpret the language that the other two branches then make regarding their laws. They were they intimidated? As a human being, they probably were intimidated because that's not going to do anything so far as their family security. And as I understand it, they probably had U.S. Marshals and other District of Columbia police up there guarding them. Were they intimidated for their job? They shouldn't have been, because I know that judges have to do what's right, even if it's not popular.
Yeah, the problem is Paul is right. The design of the Constitution is that the judiciary in Article Three is to be independent. The problem is the process. The process is clearly political, so that the president of a particular party nominates someone who is in line with the president's views, and assuming that Congress or the Senate is controlled by the same party as the president, then that nominee is going to be confirmed. So while the judiciary itself is apolitical, the nomination and approval process is very political. And, you know, you saw that, you've seen that over the last decade with the fights over whether somebody would be nominated, whether they would hold hearings, whether they would wait until the next election. So Paul is right. In the end, the judiciary is theoretically apolitical, but there's a lot of politics that goes on prior to that that gets a justice on the bench. And I think that's where the bugaboo is.
We have seen the high profile confirmation hearings going back to as long as I can remember. I think one of the first ones was with Robert Bork, who was eventually not confirmed by the U.S. Senate. And then I think of Clarence Thomas. That was when CNN was in its early years. That was a high profile confirmation hearing. He did make it. But what I'm seeing just in the last couple of years, and guys, I'd like you to speak to this, is direct pressure in ways that I'm not aware of, at least in my lifetime, on Supreme Court justices. So, for example, Paul, to your point about the marshals protecting justices, according to what I just recently read in National Review, there were people camping out in front of the conservative justices before and during when Dobbs was expected to be released. But the Biden administration did not send security to protect them. That's according to an article in National Review. There was an armed man arrested outside of Justice Brett Kavanaugh's home who had the intent to assassinate him. Currently, there is an attempt to discredit Clarence Thomas because of his relationship to a billionaire who paid tuition for Thomas's nephew and took Thomas on trips. Nothing has been established that was illegal or unethical, yet there is this effort to discredit him. This pressure campaign and this effort, if you will, to discredit the court, largely because of its opinions, is something I've not seen before. Paul, is this something that you've seen in your lifetime?
It's all about politics. It's all about the next election. It's all about trying to make somebody look bad. It's happened on both sides of the equation. But what I can say is that judges have to have strong backbones. They have to interpret language of the two policymakers, that Article 1 and Article 2, that they come up with in their various laws and their various regulations. They have to interpret those. I admire those Supreme Court justices. I admire any judge who, in the face of adversity, goes ahead and does his job or her job. I appreciate that. They're very good at what they do. Now, have I seen that happen before? I don't think that I've seen it happen to the degree, but at the same time, we've got social media these days, and we've got communications these days that you can do something irregular, and 20 minutes later, it's all around the world. It's all around the world. Whereas back in 1789, we didn't have that. Now, all that said is this: judges have got to be tough. They've got to follow the rule of law. They've got to be independent, and they have to be the checks and balances on abuse of power by the other two branches. So far, we've seen that. And one more thing, Richard, elections have consequences. Elections have consequences. There's no question about what Steve said is being true, and that is, you can be the smartest lawyer in Tennessee or Virginia or Kentucky. You can be the smartest lawyer, but unless you know somebody, you're not going to get nominated to the United States Supreme Court. It's just that simple. You've got to be involved some way or another, at least in political intercourse of some nature, to be involved. But when you get appointed, you need to do the right thing, and you need to make your decision based on the rule of law and not on policy or politics. That's what the other two branches do. That's why it's so important. It's so important that we maintain the independence of the judiciary that we've had for the last 154 years. The system, as Steve said, the system sometimes produces opinions I like and sometimes I don't like, but there's probably somebody on the other side that kind of likes them. But the point is, they're doing the right thing. They want to do well, and God bless it.
Back in March, Senator Ted Cruz and several other senators proposed legislation that would keep the Supreme Court at 9 members. What is the status of this legislation?
Ted Cruz resolution, they have to be proposed every new Congress, which occurs every 2 years, right after the November and the even year elections. And they have to be proposed right now. Dusty Rhodes in the House is a sponsor, and Ted Cruz is a sponsor. And they, when you add the number of House members and the number of senators, there's over 200 who support both Cruz and Rhodes' bill.
So what's it going to take to get this passed? There's 200 supporters, as you just mentioned, Paul, in Congress. What is it going to take to get this constitutional amendment through both houses of Congress with a three-fifths majority, I believe it is, correct?
It's two-thirds of both the House and the Senate, and then three-quarters of the states then have to ratify the constitutional amendment. But let me say this. Remember back in 1789 when our Constitution was first ratified by the 13 colonies. As a compromise, the Federalists then proposed constitutional amendments. They submitted 12 constitutional amendments in 1789. 2 years later, they were all ratified except for two of them. That's called the Bill of Rights. And that was a compromise by the Federalists versus the non-Federalists. Since 1789, we've had 27 amendments to the Constitution. Some of them only took 2 years. Some of them, like, for example, the 27th Amendment, took almost 200 years to ever be ratified. So we don't know. We don't know if it's going to be ratified in our lifetime or if it's going to be ratified 2 years from now. But what we do know that every journey starts with the first step. And that's what we're doing.
Steve, I couldn't agree with you more. The political temperature has precluded reasonable conversation. And hopefully this program will move us to that place where we can at least talk about this. So, gentlemen, I wish we had more time to talk, but we are out of time. I want to thank both of you for your efforts in preserving the independence of the United States Supreme Court. How can people get in touch with Keep Nine and be involved with what you're doing? Paul, I think you have a website. What is that website address?
The website is Keep Nine, and spell out the word nine, keepnine.org. Our co-chair, of course, is Steve Rosenthal, and I'm chair. I'm Paul Summers. And Roman Buehler, B-U-H-L-E-R, is our executive director. And you can email us at leaders@keepnine.org, or you can call us on the phone, 202-255-5000. And we really appreciate this program. We really appreciate your interest. And I appreciate General Steve Rosenthal.
All right, gentlemen, I appreciate both of you. God bless you. Keep up the good work and keep us updated. If you have more information that you'd like to share, love to have you guys back on the program.
Thanks for doing this, Richard. Appreciate the help.
Thank you.